Welcome to Pet Food Advisors. I'm Tracy Hotchner, a pet wellness advocate with a special interest in dog and cat nutrition. I wrote the Dog Bible and the Cat Bible, but I'm still learning every day about what goes into a good, healthy diet for our pets. I'm here with pet food experts to help unravel the mysteries of pet diets so you can make thoughtful decisions about feeding your own cats and dogs. If you want to stay in the know when it comes to doing what's best for your pets, follow me on Facebook and Twitter. You'll find me at Tracy Hotchner, that's Tracy with an I-E. Have a pet-related question or comment? Post it on my page or tweet me. Pet Food Advisors is a production of Pet Media, Inc., with opinions and information that are the sole responsibility of the expert guests who offer them. I also produce the philanthropic New York Dog Film Festival, sponsored by the Petco Foundation, which I take around the country, celebrating the love between dogs and their people while benefiting the animal welfare groups that bring them together. Get more information at dogfilmfestival.com and the new catfilmfestival.com. This show is brought to you in part with the generous support of Precious Cat Litter, owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian who has created a variety of low-dust litters for the health of all members of the family, so everyone can breathe easier. Precious Cat has a litter for the special needs of kittens, for senior cats, for long-haired, and for those with out-of-litter box problems, who can get back in the box with Cat-Attract litter. Precious Cat's Touch of the Outdoors is a litter made with field grasses grown in their own fields, bringing the natural scent of the outdoors to provide environmental enrichment for indoor cats. Precious Cat's newest health monitor litter has broken new ground by allowing people to find the early signs of kidney disease in their kitties and intervene before damage is done, prolonging the quality and length of their kitty cat's lives. It is so lovely to be back with Lucy Postens, the creator of The Honest Kitchen, and the woman who wrote the fabulous book, Dog Obsessed, The Honest Kitchen's Complete Guide to a Happier, Healthier Life for the Pup You Love, full of recipes, but also, Lucy, full of a lot of really useful advice and information about all kinds of dog care issues and how to interact with a veterinarian. But because you are the food lady, and because food is such a big part of everyone's lives, which is why we have a show called Pet Food Advisors, I'd love to talk about, you have a great chapter that covers a lot of issues, and it's called Mealtime Misgivings, Grappling with Picky Eating, Fat Dogs, and Food Sensitivities. So let's talk about finicky eaters. What does that come to mean to people?
Well, it can actually mean a pretty wide range of things. Sometimes it can be related to a dog's personality type. If they tend to be somewhat on the anxious side and very sensitive to what's going on in their owner's world or in their home environment, they can just get too stressed out to eat, and they really don't want to eat their meals. Sometimes puppies very early on end up being hovered over by their new owner around mealtime, which is sort of a natural tendency. You have a new baby and you want to make sure they enjoy their meals, but sometimes the owner can inadvertently cause a finicky eater. And if a puppy shows a little bit of reluctance, no sooner have they sort of glanced away from their bowl than the owner has run to the fridge to get some Parmesan cheese out and sprinkle that on there. And then next minute they've upgraded to freshly cooked bacon. And, and next minute the dog has trained you not that he's not going to eat his food unless you've augmented it with lots of tasty additions. And so you sort of create a finicky eater. And then sometimes it could be down to perhaps a senior dog who may be suffering with some dental issues or other health problems. Sometimes it's just too hot to eat and they kind of have a slightly waning appetite in the summer. Or just simple boredom and not enough dietary variety. So a really broad spectrum of different causes and reasons for that happening.
That is really a great overview of it. And many of the things that you've mentioned are not even things that I've thought of. And this is really interesting because my younger dog, Wanda, has always been the one that kind of like takes her time to come to the food. That, you know, those dogs that no matter what age they are, they look at the food bowl and they go, we think that they're saying, I think she might be poisoning me this time. It could be arsenic. Yeah. I'm not sure. Is it arsenic this time? And you're like, why do you doubt me? All the other meals have worked out well for you, as far as I know. So there's that way reluctance to even go to the bowl. And then they get there, and if you hand, I know, I'm sure this falls right into your finicky eater issue. Even to this day, she's 19 months, I will sometimes take a little handful, which now that I've finally gotten her to eat the Honest Kitchen, which in the beginning, she was like that kid that would only eat one thing. And so the Honest Kitchen was many things and seemed to put her off. But now the way you've described this finicky eater of an anxious dog, I see now that it's an anxiety around the whole topic of a mealtime. Kind of maybe like some teenagers who become bulimic or anorexic for obviously different reasons. But talk about that, because I think some of us, first of all, don't even fully realize our dog is an anxious dog because they have a lot of joy in life and a lot of things are okay with them. But new things and things that happen, they don't cringe, they don't, you know, run away, but it causes them some anxiety. And I think that she has that around food. I hand feed her the first few bites. Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah, and then it becomes sort of a self-perpetuating problem.
They're like, well,
being hand-fed. Sometimes some dogs will only eat things off a teaspoon, but other times it's sort of this sort of transmission of energy between the owner and the dog, and they're sort of causing one another's anxiety. The dog feels sort of pressure and a desire to please, but then it makes them feel anxious, and then they might feel a tiny bit nauseous, and then they don't want to eat.
Oh my God! You know, you think of, and I mean, how many people say to their used to say to children, "There's children starving in India," but I guess that's politically incorrect. Though there are children starving in India. So now you say there's dogs starving in India, and then you think, God, it's really true, and I don't think it's something I should even tell my dog. She should be so guilty. You know, kids used to say, well, what do you want me to do, mail my food to India? Ha ha. But actually, it's an interesting line between hovering and not, and I don't know how many people listening have experienced this, but if I don't stay there in the kitchen area, and I've tried to pick two or three different places. Would she like to be on the hearth near the wood stove? Does she want to be near to Maisie? Does she want to be far from Maisie? If I leave that area where she's eating, she completely runs after me. And I don't care how hungry she is. It's like, oh my God, if I hover too much and go, come on, come on, come on, you feel like the Italian mother, come on, have another bite of spaghetti. And then so you don't want to do that for the reasons you just said. So what is the solution? Because I can't leave either. She has to be kept company.
Yeah, I have one of my dogs, Willow, who is 11, is pretty much the same way. She's kind of had fluctuations in appetite over the years, and when she's going through a phase of not really feeling like eating, it sort of instills in Taro, my other Ridgeback, the fact that he might be the predator and perhaps he could go and challenge her.
Absolutely.
And then she gets all stressed out that if she doesn't eat it, he's going to get it. So I have to kind of hover around as well. And I found myself sort of literally staring at her and trying to coax her and pushing the bowl around or picking up bits with my hand.
Yes.
And that does seem to make things worse. So I tend to just kind of sit down in the kitchen and read a magazine or answer a couple of emails on my phone or load the dishwasher, so I'm at least there but not staring.
It's funny, isn't it? I mean, and it's always comforting to know that someone who's such a professional in the field, I mean, you're a professional feeder. That's what you do. You're like the most professional feeder I personally know. I mean, you care about what they're eating and how you make it and where you source it and all these things. And variety is like your middle name. I mean, I still see whole cranberries and pieces of, dried banana in their food. I'm like, girls, it's a fruit medley. You get to have your fruit cocktail in with your dinner. And speaking of saying that she was nervous about the Honest Kitchen, she was for a while. Texturally, it seemed to put her off. So now we have to admit all these neurotic things. She now gets her meal either in two courses. First, you eat your Honest Kitchen course, and then you get this little bit of kibble. I'm trying to get them off of kibble. Because I think generally it's just not, if you can afford the time, the money, the energy to not do that, you don't go there. But if you have a finicky one, who that's their kind of blankie, somehow kibble's become the safe thing. Not interesting kibble, not mixed with anything, just plain. It's like that kid that will only eat Ritz crackers. You're like, oh, how did I wind up with that kid when I'm a gourmet, you know?
So that's certainly a part of it, is they sort of get addicted to that, the texture or the aroma or whatever else it might be, the junk ingredients that go into some of the poorer quality kibbles. But we also hear it the other way around, and particularly in colder weather, as many parts of the country are experiencing now, dogs just don't want to eat a meal of cold, hard pellets. They want to actually have something kind of a bit more warm and nourishing and moist and colorful, and they feel more comforted by having something like an Honest Kitchen meal, or at least having a little bit of warm broth poured onto their kibble just to make it feel a bit less dead, I guess.
Well, it's very funny because I don't know if I ever told you this story, but obviously off the air. But years ago, oh, God, when I was still competing in horse shows, so it goes back, I don't know, 8 years or 10 years, I had a friend with a sweet Labrador, just so nice, and she was feeding only kibble and not a brand I particularly like. She didn't know any better, and I filled her in on the details, and she was utterly horrified that that's what was in this particular kibble and that a dog needed a really balanced meal and real fruit and real vegetables and real rotation of protein. And I said, you should try the Honest Kitchen. And I had a bunch of samples from some place I'd been where I'd been giving them out. And she said, I don't know, Toby is the most picky dog. And, you know, we can't even barely get him to eat a piece of steak. Okay, we'll try it. So she put down just a small portion, a sample portion of it. I'll never forget this. And he licked it clean. And she was absolutely astonished. And then she told me, a week or two later, she'd started to order it, and the dog was mad for it. And she said that he would sit in the kitchen and drool and whine while it was up on the counter being rehydrated for the 10 minutes that it says to do it on your box. And I was like, you wait 10 minutes? Oh, my dogs wouldn't let me wait 10 minutes, and never. Now, I know that's not correct. It's supposed to rehydrate. But I figure, you know, if I put a lot of water in with it, it's like on its way to rehydrating, right? But that dog, it became mad for it. And someone that does a lot of work for me on my property has two Weimaraner females also, who sadly, being another two Weimaraner females, do not get along with my girls. But they were always feeding only kibble. They didn't know any better, and they are mad for their dogs. I mean, really, like cuckoo. These are my children. They won't socialize with people that want to bring their children over if the children aren't respectful of the dogs. So I gave him some samples of the Honest Kitchen, and he, one of the two was apparently finicky. It's gotten to the point that if he runs low on the Honest Kitchen, his dogs will not eat this kibble, which was a good kibble and a nice kibble that they've eaten their whole life, or that he switched to. They won't eat it. But when he's got the Honest Kitchen in, you know, half-half, they lick their plates clean. It's interesting how finicky can turn into someone with a big appetite once they get the hang of it.
Yes.
So, I mean, how do we avoid turning them into that? It's one thing to say, oh, how good that your dog will now eat his fruits, vegetables, quinoa, and all the other good things in your food. But how do we turn back the clock if we've gotten them used to only the rotisserie chicken shredded off the bone, which my sister does for her little dogs?
Yeah.
That's what they'll eat.
Yeah, there are a few different approaches. Sometimes just literally switching up the receptacle that they're eating their food from can make a surprising difference. So sometimes it's actually a problem with the bowl itself. It's not the food. There are some cheap bowls that are made in China that potentially have toxins in them. Some bowls are particularly loud when a dog's tags on his collar knock into them, and that can kind of cause a headache.
Wow.
So if you, in those types of situations, just experimenting perhaps with a plastic bowl or a raised up bowl, or even, I think, as one of the people that we talk about in Dog Obsessed did, buying or just even using one of your own china plates, allowing them to, first of all, it's sort of playing a bit of a mind game because they think all of a sudden they're getting something extra special because it's on one of your plates, not in their bowl. But just switching it up, doing a really tiny meal. So rather than giving them this sort of overwhelmingly huge bowl of whatever it is overflowing, just give them a couple of tablespoons of a tiny meal, and that will actually start the pre-digestion process. It will get the saliva and digestive juices going, and then they might have an appetite for a little bit more once they've finished that. But sometimes just the sight of a huge meal can put them
That's off. A good point. I mean, I've loved to cook for friends and family, and my late husband was could not cope with a plate that was very generously overfilled, like looked like a Thanksgiving buffet plate sometimes. It's okay. I said, you don't have to eat it all. No, he just couldn't look at all that food. It was too daunting. So he'd take half of everything back and he'd eat what was there or he wouldn't. But this container idea is riveting because I kind of came to it on my own. And I don't know if you've ever heard anybody using a big, heavy glass Pyrex pie plate, because that's what I've switched to.
Yes.
I had every imaginable kind of bowl. And it's true about the Chinese bowls. There was a stainless bowl. No one really knows which of the many stainless bowls are made in China. And I even use stainless bowls for cooking, you know, for mixing and so forth. Mm-hmm. They were very bad. They were decomposing or something into the food. I mean,
wow.
A stainless steel bowl is not at all benign. We could look it up, but there was a period where there was some serious health issues around just ordinary looking stainless steel bowls that were dog bowls made in China. But I had what I thought was a really swell bowl. I really liked it. It was made of this kind of nice kind of heavy, heavy plastic. And it had, I don't know, I just thought it was great. It had a rubberized bottom, but it had sides that were high and they kind of sloped in. And it took me a while to realize that for a long-snouted dog was, and for a brachycephalic, for a short-snouted Frenchie or a Boston Bulldog or a Boxer could be a problem too, that it was hard to get to what became corners and nooks and crannies because also they don't always have a way to get all the way around the bowl. So now I use this very heavy fluted edge pie pan. You just buy it at the supermarket and it's Pyrex and it's glass and it washes up great. And it's only, the sides are only a couple of inches high and it's really nice and you can see how much is left. I don't know. Are they confused that they can see through to the floor? I don't know. That's what I sometimes wonder. They're like, wait a minute, what's the floor and what's my dish? Did you ever hear of anyone doing that?
I have heard of variations on that theme. I don't know that specifically the pie dish, but certainly going with a lower-sided dish. Because if you just think about what it would feel like, I know dogs' faces are obviously shaped differently than ours, but what it would feel like to have to plunge your whole head into something to get the food out, it does really feel unnatural. And I think dogs are a lot more sensitive to things like that than we give them credit for. And just so not having sort of metal sides immediately around your eyes while you're trying to enjoy your dinner probably does make a pretty positive impact.
For those who are fussy, now, for course, of people that are with Labradors who are your typical Labrador, they're happy to eat your bras, they already eat dinner from what one hears.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not so much of an issue that people might be laughing and going, really, that matters? But it does,
right.
Because what you're describing about finicky, I mean, your dogs are huge dogs. My dogs are huge dogs. It doesn't have to be Chihuahuas that have these issues. It's just sort of almost a symbol of people who are very, a little bit spoiling of their smaller dogs. And we're not really spoiling these bigger dogs. These bigger dogs have eating issues. They, you know, if there was a psychiatrist, they could discuss it with them and, you know, they could all go to a support group. But this anxiety that expresses itself during eating, so we call it finicky, but I think your realization that there's anxiety around food and the fact that there might be one or more other animals, I mean, that's a tricky one because that same thing happens with Maisie. She keeps her distance, but if Wanda goes running after me because I go to, I don't know, answer the phone or take the clothes out of the dryer thinking this is a good time, she doesn't let me leave without her, then Maisie can go to town.
Yeah.
So those issues too, right? On the
exactly.
one hand, you want the kind of inspiration that the other dog is eating, but not the threat.
Exactly, yeah. And again, that really goes down to the fact that it's so important to have this individualized approach. So some dogs do get stressed out with the competition, that they feel like if they don't eat their food quickly enough, somebody else is going to get it, and then they feel perhaps nauseous about the fact that they just ate their food too quickly and then next time they're reluctant. Sometimes it could be the opposite problem where that you just have a solo dog who perhaps is the only baby in the family and someone is paying way too much attention at meal times, and they're the ones who could potentially benefit from having a doggy brother or sister to introduce a little bit of competition at meal time and perhaps absorb some of their owner's energy so that it's not all being sort of channeled into one animal but two, and just having that competitive energy in the room might make them feel like eating a little bit more. So it really is just down to trying to figure out the individual animal. There's no one size fits all approach that's going to be an answer for everybody, but really trying to put yourself in your dog's shoes and think about it from his perspective and what's causing the issue, trying to sort of break it down and deconstruct it and then figure out a system that's going to work.
Which in the end makes for mealtimes being more happy, because anybody who's a nurturing person, which is most certainly many women and many men as well, and certainly a lot of pet owners and a lot of parents, it's so satisfying, makes you feel so good when they lap up what you gave and they smile and they come over and lick you all over. In my case, I now have little leavings of the Honest Kitchen on all my clothes because they come right over without wiping their mouth on their, you know, serviette. And they come over and they go, that was so good. Thank you so much. And like, thank you so much for that deposit. But there's such satisfaction in it for us. And then we feel, I now understand how parents can get neurotic about children who are poor and picky eaters, that the parents feel like they failed. The parents feel like, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with this child? He only wants to eat boiled noodles with ketchup on them. And I'm a gourmet cook, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, they're each individuals. You're a mom. I remember back when you were pregnant a pretty long time ago, when your kids were little and just starting to eat solid foods, did you begin to think of some comparison with dogs and eating, since it was already your profession?
A little bit, yes. And actually, ironically, we did have the same issue with our youngest daughter, Asha, who's now 10. That she had a really, really tiny appetite right from the time that she was nursing as a newborn. And then she ended up, actually, when she began as a toddler, began eating food, regular solid food. She really enjoyed things like broccoli, which don't have a huge amount of calories in them. And so we ended up with our weekly weigh-ins at the doctor just to make sure everything was okay. But she's just genetically a tiny person. She's very petite, which comes mostly from my husband's side of the family. His mom and grandma are both very tiny. And ultimately, everyone just said, okay, she's just genetically predisposed to be small. She must have a tiny tummy and she gets full quickly. But
yes.
Certainly, I did try to... It's difficult to kind of be objective sometimes when you're in a stressful situation like that. But I did try to use some of my puppy knowledge to see if I could figure out what was going on.
It's fun how that works. Well, I would love to wrap up by having you read this very – to also get a sense of what a wonderful book Dog Obsessed is. And it's so really full of a lot of practical ideas and very common sense. But also it's so fun and so funny. And I would if you're up for it, I'd love you to read The 7 Signs Your Dog's a Finicky Eater, because
sure.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
And it sort of puts it into a nutshell what we've been talking about.
Sure, yeah. So The 7 Signs Your Dog's a Finicky Eater. Number one is he takes so long to eat that you'd think he'd been served in courses. Number two is, in the words of Jerry Seinfeld, she eats her peas one at a time. Number three is you could find yourself putting down his food dish with a sense of trepidation and you hover nervously at his side for the duration of every meal. Four is you feed him by hand from a teaspoon or more often than just on his birthday. Number five is mealtime involves an elaborate sniffing ritual. Six,
yep.
Six is the cat has become his taste tester. And we all know how difficult they are to please.
I'll say.
And finally, number seven is you're beginning to suspect that he might have you trained, because now you actually make people food scraps just for him from scratch.
So well said. It really is. And I think that a lot of these ideas help people to think of their dog as an individual and to understand that some of these things we're contributing to, and to just sort of see them each as individuals and try to not make the problem worse, but to accept them for who they are. And try to put the best food possible in the nicest possible dish in a way that they will take it in and stay happy and satisfied and not get chubby at the same time.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. And then I think one final point just to make very briefly is, if you do have a dog who's normally been a very voracious eater and you haven't had a major life change or moving of house or something else that's caused sudden stress, then do pay attention to your animal and do get them checked out by a vet just in case there's some other medical issue going on. And
great
potentially
point.
Also just think about the food as well. Might be worth just putting a call into the manufacturer just to make sure that there aren't any potential quality issues. Check the bag, make sure the food hasn't expired and that there's not some super logical thing right under your nose that you haven't explored.
That's a great point to always, and I used to say this all the time before having conversations, and it completely slipped my mind that no matter what the issue is with a dog, if they've changed in their eating, drinking, or bowel habits, it's actually reason to go to the vet. So we're talking about finicky eaters as a lifestyle and as a personality. But yes, absolutely, Lucy, if something changes, one of the few ways we know that something's wrong with our dogs has to do with eating.
Yeah.
Eating and eliminating. So those are signs that it's something that's worth checking out. And if it goes on for more than a day, you don't need your dog to throw up to tell you something's not
exactly
quite right.
Could,
maybe just not eating in itself,
yes, yeah,
right?
It could just be a wobbly tooth or a dental abscess, something like
yes.
that. Making
yes,
them
so, absolutely.
Definitely do the homework on the physiological side as well as the emotional.
Well said. Well, this is a treat, and I look forward to having more conversations with you about all the great information and advice in Dog Obsessed. I think your point of view is delightful and incredibly helpful to all of us, and especially to our dogs. Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you so much, Tracy. Great talking to you.
This show has also been supported by Best Pet RX, a unique compounding pharmacy for pets in New York City. They can turn any medication for dogs and cats into a custom-flavored oral paste, chewable tablet, or a liquid that your pet will actually like. And Best Pet RX will keep trying formulations at no extra charge and offer same-day delivery in New York City and overnight delivery anywhere else so that your pet can happily take the medication she needs to get well and stay well. Support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog or puppy is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. If you're concerned about over-vaccinating your pet, whether young or old, VaxaCheck can help you and your veterinarian make the best decision about vaccinating in your individual situation. Shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones and avoid unnecessarily over-vaccinating dogs. VaxaCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind.